He'll make it for sure. Now that's why I backed him on Tab Touch.
Hey, Luke!
Yes, Gene Simmons?
He's probably the best when it comes to this stuff!
Thanks, Gene.
You've got the touch!
You got the touch, you got the power. Got the touch? Choose Tap Touch. Better your bet. Download the app today.
Chances are, you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Hoop Seven's Basketball Hustle. And all of a sudden, Cody, we know the top four teams. The top four teams at the end of the regular season are now the ones that have made it to the playoffs. And it's been a bit of a crazy week with these play-in games to get to this point. But I think the fact that we've got Melbourne United up against the Illawarra Hawks, the Perth Wildcats against the Tasmania Jackjumpers, we couldn't ask for any more ahead of this playoff series. A lot going on at the Sydney Kings as well, Cody, for us to talk about over the last week. And it looks like they've got a new coach, and he could very well be the perfect man for that job. They need somebody with a high profile and a high character to get everything in line there. So we'll talk about that. The brave New Zealand Breakers have bowed out, but I don't know if I've seen a team have to put up with more than I've seen them put up through this season, and they were still one basket away from being one of these top four teams. So we'll talk about all of that. And now all of a sudden, after a long couple of weeks to get to this point, Cody, without much basketball, things are going to heat up and we'll find out who wins the NBL championship over the next couple of weeks. Of course, we're here thanks to Hoop 7 and Tab Touch as always. I'm Chris Pike, but the man everyone's tuning to hear from, championship winning Warwick Senators captain, St. Louis star, former Illawarra Hawks and Sydney Kings star, Cody Ellis. Good to have you back.
It's good to be back again. Look, glad that work is slowing down enough that I can come in and do this with you again. So again, big shout out to Simon for filling in and giving us some really fun episodes to listen to.
Now, good to be sitting alongside you again, Cody. Most importantly, you spent a week in Sydney.
Yeah.
Did you and Lauren manage to find any Taylor Swift tickets?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So, I mean, look, it was one of those things. I didn't have too many high hopes. Lauren was certainly the optimist in all that. But, We tried. I felt sorry that we couldn't get them for her. But, is what it is. I mean, it was the biggest show that's come through Australia in a while. Yes. So, it is what it is. But it was really good to get to Sydney and see my brother and catch up with him for a while.
What sort of world are we living in where you couldn't get tickets, but Julian O'Brien and his family were able to go?
That's fair. No, that's fair. I mean, I certainly hit up Jules and to see if he had any connections, but
But he wasn't willing to give him yours.
No, sorry,
he wasn't willing to give his over to you.
Yeah. So no, that's all good. No, it's all good. Right. Looked like him and the family had a good time his shirt was top notch. So if no one's seen it, please go over to his socials and have a look at the shirt that he was wearing there. It was a good one.
Just before we get into the basketball talk, we just finished a long weekend in Perth. Looked like you and the family had a good time, and you took the dogs out for a bit of a trip.
Yeah, so put the dogs just in boarding, so they could run around with some other pups, which was great. So they really enjoyed it. It was great to get over to Sydney and catch up with my brother who we hadn't seen in a couple of years, and it was really good. It was really good.
Our third co-host, Elvis, has been through a tough couple of weeks as well since you last saw him, but he's now fully on the road to recovery. He's had an all-night party last night as we record this, and he's sleeping it off, so he might pop up at some point during the show. So hello to Elvis, and well done for being a brave boy to get back to full health. People are probably tuning in to hear us talk about basketball.
Probably, Cody.
So we're fresh off the play-in game, the official play-in game. So the Illawarra Hawks and the New Zealand Breakers on Monday night. They played out a hell of a game. It was a dramatic game. It could have gone either way in the end. Parker Jackson Cartwright had a hell of a good look at a three on the buzzer that could have forced the game to overtime. And in fairness, it was probably a game that deserved overtime. But also, I don't know if the Breakers could have survived another five minutes. They've been through a hell of a lot all season long. And I feel like the Hawks have probably got a little bit more left in the tank going forward to test Melbourne United. But fresh off that game last night, How did you feel coming out of it?
Oh, exhausted. It was a lot. No, it was really good. Like, come down to the fourth quarter and it was both teams just haymaker after haymaker. And it really looked like New Zealand had snatched all the momentum when Abercrombie hit that three to put him up for the first time. I thought that might have been it. And then J-Rob coming down and in back-to-back triples, which probably wasn't on my bingo card for the night. But he kept him in it. He was unreal. Just timely shots. And, look, it was an unbelievable game. Certainly a game that probably deserved overtime, like you said. Would have loved a bit of free basketball. But, look, I'm sure the Hawks are glad that that shot didn't go down by PJC.
How good was it to see Wollongong get so behind their team? I mean, the two seasons under Brian Gorgeous, they did well to get to the semifinals, but I never felt like they fully had that connection with the community like they did even back to when you were playing and made a grand final. And sort of after every game, Gorge would come out and implore the community to get behind our team. But it looks like they've really embraced this team. It might be Justin Tatum as coach, or it might be simply the way they're playing. They play that hard-nosed Illawarra type basketball that community loves. And how good was it to see that place packed and so loud?
Oh, it was awesome. It was really cool to see. And look, I'm really happy for the club and the city to be in this position again, which is great. And I think I was saying that it's their first home finals win since 2017, I think is what they said. So that's huge. Like that's awesome. And look, like it's definitely what is being put on the floor, but a lot of that's got to do with what Tatum's done there. I think they are a lot of fun to watch, and you're right, they play that hard-nosed defense and just that grind out, gritty type of game. And I mean, no one better at it than Dave O'Hickey, and what he's been able to do for that team has been perfect for that club and that town. So it was awesome to see. I think they had that place packed out. I don't think there was too many spare seats in that whole arena. So look, would have been good to be part of that in the stadium.
It's not as big as some other arenas in the league, but I was there in 2010 for game two of that grand final series, and I don't know if I've ever heard a louder building. You've played in that building when it's been packed as well.
Yeah.
That crowd gets as loud as anybody in the country.
Yeah, they absolutely do. Yeah, because it's a smaller stadium, obviously, the sound can't travel too far. Yeah. So once it's packed out and everyone's screaming and yelling, it's just as loud as most of the other places around the country. So it's certainly a fortress.
How much did they hate you when you were a Sydney Kings player?
Oh, yeah, look, they didn't really know us too well. So, it was, it was always fun going down and playing when we were at the Kings. Again, just the rivalry in general is always something that you kind of understand when you're on both sides of it. So it was always fun. Didn't have too many happy games in Wollongong as a King, but we weren't obviously the best Kings teams back then. So it's a fun place to play. It's certainly a shooter's gym, so I always enjoy playing there.
Only thing I didn't like, whoever threw a ball in Tom Abercrombie's face as he was walking off the court for his last ever game, not quite ideal.
No, not quite ideal. I think that might have been Sam punching the ball, and it ended up bouncing up and hitting him in the face.
It could have been. Because I asked Tom after the game, how were you feeling walking off after your last game? And he said, I was pissed off because someone threw a ball in my face.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's how he'll always remember walking off after his last game.
Yeah. I can't remember. It might have even been Robinson who just launched the ball in the air, or Hickey maybe launched the ball in the air. Yeah. And then I think it was coming down near Sam, and I think he just kind of like punched it, and it bounced off the floor and straight into Tom's face. I was like, that's not ideal.
No.
Not ideal. So, look, he didn't look overly happy walking off, did he?
Oh, no. It's not much fun getting a basketball in your face.
Yeah, it's not fun at all, especially after a loss.
Yes. We will talk about Tom later on because it's been a hell of a career. We'll go through the play-in tournament after our first break, but there's been a lot going on, especially the Sydney Kings, Cody, that I want to get taken care of in this first segment. First of all, was there any doubt in your mind as soon as the Sydney Kings lost that game to the Breakers that Mahmoud Abdulfadah was very short in his future as the Sydney Kings coach?
No, I mean, we'd spoken about it probably a month and a half, 2 months ago now, that he probably wouldn't be at the helm at the end of the season. I guess his only saving grace would have been if they ended up figuring it out and winning a championship. And even then, I think it would have been, touch and go if he actually stayed. I am surprised that it took 2 days, not the day after. So, look, I think reading stuff on socials and reading articles and stuff, it was the ownership group kind of wanted to let the dust settle a bit, which I understand. I thought it would have taken more than 2 days to let the dust settle, but I think it was a very obvious, you know, decision to make. And I think when you've got a guy like Brian Goorjian on the market and has openly come out saying that he wants to coach again in the NBL, you know, that's, I'm sure they've been talking to him for a while now, which isn't great. And look, I think there's a lot going on in the Kings. So I think Gorge is a good first step, but there's going to be a lot to happen and change a bit more of the culture within that group moving forward, because they kind of lost their way a little this year.
They did. Do you feel like Gorge would have been the only consideration they've made? Do you feel like there would have even been anyone entered their mind because it's happened so quickly?
I'm not really sure. I think I'm sure they probably would have reached out to Trev.
Yep.
I think that ownership group has got some pretty good connections around the world, so I'm sure they would have had a few guys in mind. But I think, you know, once a guy like Gorge comes up, especially with his history of the club as well, and you know what he's done in the league, and he understands the league, and like you mentioned earlier, a really good culture guy. To step into the role, I think that probably would have been a bit of a no-brainer, as long as they could all be on the same page about moving forward and what is expected and what, you know, is expected from the club for Brian and his staff. And look, I think it's the right decision. I do. And it's going to be fun to see him at the helm of the Kings.
It will be. We've talked about how Mahmood might have been a good coach in the NBL on a different team, because I think I sort of floated my theory a few weeks ago that I feel like he'd be a great coach in terms of giving a team direction, but not necessarily a great motivational coach, and not necessarily a coach that holds his team to account. Brian Goorjian doesn't let you get away with anything. Even if you're Jalen Adams, if you're not doing what he asks, he'll put you on the first plane out of there. I mean, I feel like he would have been a great coach for this team this season, but moving forward, he will hold everyone to account. He'll make them professional. He'll make them... Well, he's an inspirational coach. He's the sort of coach like a Justin Tatum that you want to go out there and play for. Do you feel like he's the ideal person for this particular Kings playing group?
Yeah, I think so. And look, with the big turnover they kind of had from last season to this season, I think he would have been really good for them this year. You know, it's different when you've got you know, a team full of vets that kind of understand what is needed, and you know, just putting things into place and direction is really all they need. They don't need that, like, kick up the butt every now and then and all that. I think would have been fine with Coach Mood. But with this group, and especially after being so successful for that past couple of years, I think, like I mentioned, the turnover was ridiculous with the talent that they lost. They still had a ridiculously talented squad, don't get me wrong, but a lot new to the culture and you know, trying to fit into that culture. I think Goorjian is the perfect fit for that.
I feel like it's a great fit for him as well. There was a lot of talk about him in Adelaide, but I don't necessarily know if that was going to be a great fit for him, because you're still trying to build something there. So he would have had to come in and do a lot of rebuilding. And Adelaide's a very closed-in market where if their fan base knew that they had chosen him over Scott Ninnis, there's instant pressure on him because they know that you chose him over our favourite son, and you've been our great rivals for your 30 years. All of a sudden you're the enemy coming in. There's a lot of pressure on him. There would have been for him to perform instantly in Adelaide, I feel like. In so many ways in Sydney, it's a big market for him. I think he deserves to finish his career in the biggest market. He instantly becomes the face of the franchise.
Again.
I just feel like it's the perfect situation for him too. To this will be his last NBL coaching job. I feel like it's the perfect place for him to do it.
Yeah, I think so. I do. Yeah. Back to the Kings, and like you said, the big market, I think, is really good for a guy like Gorge, and you know, someone that they're certainly going to have the budget to be able to get who he wants in. You know, a bit different than when he was at the helm of the Hawks. quite the opposite. So yeah, look, I do think that if he had been in Adelaide, it would have certainly been some pressures on him, but I don't think that would have bothered him in the slightest. I don't think that is something that would affect him these days at all. No.
It doesn't bother him, but it does. No. It probably affects everyone around him, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it certainly does. So, no, look, he will certainly fit in well with the Kings, and I'm looking forward to kind of seeing, you know, how they build their roster with him, and I'm glad that they've kind of figured it out early so that they can build the roster, his roster that he wants, or at least he has a hand in it.
Sure.
You know? So the amount of times we've seen teams start building rosters without a head coach is ridiculous, and I've never understood that. So,
well, I think this Kings team, I don't know. I don't know if Mood had much of a say in this team at all.
He wouldn't have. I don't think he would have. And look, again, had ridiculous amount of talent, but didn't really suit the way he coached. Yeah. So, look, I think this would have been a better fit than Adelaide for sure. Mm. I think they've done the right thing.
You've got three very headstrong people now, though. So you've got Gorge as the head coach, you've got Paul Smith as the owner, and you've got Andrew Bogut as part of the ownership group. But he's almost like their head of basketball in a lot of ways. It kind of feels like three very headstrong people. Can they all work together?
I think so. Obviously, Paul Smith and Bogues both know Gorge's history and that. So I think it's a bit of a no-brainer that they'll work well together. Again, like you hire a head coach to do a job, and you've got to kind of let him free a little. And I think having a guy like Gorge, you can let free and let him do his thing because he's so renowned for what he's done in his entire career. So I think the best thing that they could do is probably take half a step back and give him free run, which I think is what they'll do.
Last thing on Gorge. How does building a new culture and a new team with the Sydney Kings mesh with now getting stuck into the Boomers job and trying to win an Olympic medal in Paris? How do those two things work together?
Yeah, it's a tough one, I'm sure, because that's a lot to think about. Yeah. You know, it's two very big things that are completely separate from each other. And look, I think he's got a lot to do for this Paris team because I think he's got some big decisions to make.
Yes,
because there's certainly some older guys that this will probably be their last if they even, you know, decide to go with them. And there's some young up-and-comers that are going to be pushing for spots from guys that have earned spots in the past. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a tough team for them to pick. Yeah. And then you're right, trying to build a full team for the next NBL season is also no easy task. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a fine line because obviously – being the Boomers head coach is, you know, one of the highest honors you can have. So, you know, that's got to be such a focus. But with the, I'm not saying it was a full disaster, but the disaster of a season they had in the Kings this year, there's going to be a lot riding on what happens in this offseason for them. So, yeah, look, I don't envy him because that's a lot of work to, to have to deal with. And I think that, you know, if it was too many other people than Gorge, I'd say that's probably too much for him to deal with. But a guy like Gorge, who is super invested in everything like that, then I don't think it'll be too much of an issue for him. Yeah, lots of decisions to be made in the next few months for them.
No, he certainly won't be doing either job half-assed.
No,
he'll be giving everything. Last thing, and then we'll take our first break on. And sticking at the Sydney Kings, what was your reaction when you found out that Jalen Galloway has now signed a two-way deal with the Milwaukee Bucks, and their season only ended 6 days ago in the NBL, and we're watching him right now, and he's already on the bench with Milwaukee.
Yeah, we just saw him pop up on the screen behind us not too long ago. Look, I think that's good for him. I think that for a lot of these young guys, I do think that as cool as being drafted and hearing your name on that night would be, I think like these two-way deal is ideal for a lot of. You know, I think that he's going to go over and I don't know how much he'll play, if he plays at all, because I still think he's probably another year or two away at least, at the very least, from really stepping on a floor and letting his presence known. Mm. But it'll be such a good experience for him.
Yeah.
And the fact that NBA teams are now looking at these young guys from the league is awesome. You know, it's something that With the two-way deals now, it's a lot easier to be able to go over there and do that, and then you can still come back here afterwards and if it doesn't pan out. And look, I think that we're going to see a few of the NBL guys with their names in the draft this year that we'll obviously hear called, but I do think for certain guys, like going down this route of the two-way deal is probably more ideal for them than being drafted.
That's my thinking as well. Unless you're going to be a first round draft pick and you're pretty much guaranteed of being on that 15 man roster, Luke Travis is a great example where I don't necessarily think it's been the best thing for him to get drafted by Cleveland, because if he hadn't got drafted, I think he might be playing somewhere in the NBA right now just because he's available. That's where I feel like Josh Bannon nominating for the draft, maybe he would be better off if he had have been able to get a two-way deal similar to this than Jalen's got. That might have been a better way to go than, at best, he might be a draft pick in the sort of 60s, 70s, 80s if he does get picked up.
Yeah, so he'll definitely be a second-round pick for sure. I wouldn't see him being picked in the first round at all.
Yeah.
But again, like it's one of those things that growing up, especially over here, growing up, your dream is to hear your name in the draft. Yes. You know, hear your name called out, and all that sort of stuff. Yep. But then, you know, they own your rights, which is tough. The two-way deals are ideal for, you know, like you said, especially some of those guys that are probably fringe at the moment, to be able to picked up by different teams and have that versatility of being able to, okay, these guys want me for however long, a month, all right, then I can come back. Oh, you know, different team maybe needs me at the moment. Like, you're able to do that. It's a lot easier to do that than trading rights or buying people out or stuff like that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. It is an interesting one. And like I said, we'll hear a few pretty well-known names down here called on draft night, I think.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of guys drafted. But before the draft even, is there anyone else that you could imagine popping up for the rest of this NBA season from the NBL? Does anyone jump out that might make this similar jump?
Yeah, the main one for me would be Magne.
Yes.
Just purely off what he's done this past month, really. Yep. He's just kind of gotten better and better every single game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what he did against the Hawks was unbelievable. Yes. You know, that was one of the better performances I've seen from, especially a big.
Yep.
You see these standout performances from, you know, guys like Bryce and stuff like that. But for a big, especially a five man and a legitimate five man, to have the impact that he did was unreal. It's nice to kind of see him mold into what we thought he was going to be, because you know he's had these issues with injuries, right? That's not ideal. It's not ideal, and you never want to see that from a younger guy, especially a guy like him with the potential that he had. So I think of anyone, there's a few other guys. I mean, DJ, purely for his shooting and the fact that he can light it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, a guy like Chris Goulding, who has done that for his entire career and never really got that shot, probably wouldn't surprise me if he didn't really get that opportunity, unfortunately. Yeah. But, yeah, Magne would be my number one and probably the only one that I can really see someone trying to pick up.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, if he finishes this final series the way he started it, I mean, he's... We're not going to see much more of him down here. So. He's just the only thing holding him back is just staying healthy, and he looks so healthy right now. All right, Cody, let's take a deep breath. We'll hear from Tab Touch, and then we'll go through the play-in tournament and give our thoughts.
Sounds good.
He'll make it for sure. That's why I backed him on Tab Touch.
You got the touch. You got the power. Got the touch? Choose Tab Touch. Better your bet. Download the app today.
Imagine what you could be buying instead.
All right, back on Hoop 7's Basketball Hustle. I'm here again this week with Cody Ellis. Let's go through the play-in tournament, Cody. We've seen three games and we've got it down to the same two teams that finished third and fourth. Anyway, before we get to each game specifically, do you like the format? Are you happy with it now that it's played out?
Absolutely. I think it makes every game during the season mean something. And then I do think that, you know, obviously first, second get the ultimate advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And then third and fourth still do have the advantage, which is great. And then, you know, five and six still have that opportunity of making something special happen, which we almost saw with New Zealand.
Yes,
so,
yes.
No, look, I think the whole play-in tournament is an absolute win for the league.
So we saw the doubleheader to start things off last Wednesday night. The seeding qualifier, so it was third against fourth. The Tasmania Jack Jumpers beat the Illawarra Hawks 92-76, and I don't know if there's any other way to describe this game other than it was Will Magne's game.
Yeah.
It was an incredible performance, and it all started the very first possession of the game when Marcus Lee injured his shoulder. Will had to come into the game, and he ended up finishing with 25 points, 10 rebounds, 4 blocks, 2 steals. He shot 10 of 14. They were plus 27. His 30 minutes, 26 seconds was the most he's played all season as well, and it's incredible to say those numbers are great, but I don't think even those numbers sum up just how influential he was.
No, I don't think so either. I just think, like, with the timing of some of his blocks and the fact that he kind of took Sam Froling completely out of the game. Yes. You know, for someone who's been so good and so dominant this season for the Hawks, I think the fact that they could kind of, well, the fact that he could pretty much single-handedly just take him completely out of the game was super impressive. Yeah. And, yeah, look, numbers are unreal, but you're right, they don't tell the full story of the game.
It's easy explosiveness. We saw him come back to the NBL for the first time 3 years ago when he came to Perth, and he had no lift in his legs at all. He had no pace off his first step. He looked like a lumberer. Gee, he's a different beast now that he looks healthy. He explosiveness, his takeoff, his jumping, his timing. He's just a beast. And I think Scott Roth, you know, described it the best. He's just a beast right now. Yeah. And he could be the biggest and most influential player left in the competition.
Look, I think so. You're right. Especially when he was in Perth, you know, kind of coming off some injuries and his body still wasn't right, but he was playing. He was playing minutes. And, yeah, I thought that's kind of what his career path would be, was to be that five-man, that old traditional five-man, is that low block, kind of back to the basket type big. Mm. And you're right, he's completely changed his game, and he's kind of, you know, the fact that his body has held up and he's in really good shape. I mean, he was gassed after that 30 minutes, you know, he's not played that many minutes this whole season, and he's still, I'm sure he's probably still on some sort of minutes restriction, but now with Lee out, that's got to go out the window, unfortunately. Yeah. But he's springy again. He's using his athleticism, and just his timing in general has been unreal. I think probably the most impressive play the whole game for me was when you could see Sam was getting a bit pissed off with how he was getting guarded, and you know, nothing was getting easy for him, and Sam dropped his shoulder straight into his chest and actually pushed him back a lot, and we basically had a little easy layup.
Yeah.
And Will somehow, just after taking that hit, was able to spring up and, I mean, sent it out of court. Then gave the Mutombo, not in my house. Just the ability to be able to take a hit and still be able to get up and not only contest a shot, but to be able to send it packing was so impressive. Yep. And I think that if he can stay healthy, I think he's poised for a big career.
The other thing I loved about the Jack Jumpers is that a lot of people might look at Milton Doyle's game and think he's only scored 5 points and he didn't have a big impact. Mm-hmm. He was fantastic in the playmaking role. And I love this team when the ball is in Milton's hands and he's finding everyone out. So he was a big reason why Jack McVay had 26 points, why Jordan Crawford had 20. And his chemistry to throw the lobs up to Will Magnay was fantastic as well. So, I mean, he had 10 assists, 8 rebounds. It's just about as good a game as you can get from a guy that only scored 5 points.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of proves how good he actually is, right? And the fact that, I'm not 100% sure how many shots he took, but it wouldn't have been too many because he was, you didn't really notice him a whole lot.
He took 11, so he didn't shoot well, but he didn't need to.
No, but for a guy like Milton Doyle, 11 shots is something that he should have in the first half, right?
Yes.
The fact that he can not let that affect him at all, like whether his shot's going down, whether he's not getting shots, or if he's not the sole focus of the offense, doesn't matter for him, right? And that, I think, proves how important he is to this team, especially as an import, right? And with his, you know, scoring prowess and how good he is on the offensive end at putting the ball in the hole, as soon as he puts the ball on the floor, everyone has to sink in and help because of how good he is. And the fact that he's a willing passer and a really good passer, and he understands the game, and he reads the defense really well, he knows the right plays to make, I think he's such a big asset for the Jack Jumpers and kind of how far they'll go.
Absolutely. The second game on that Wednesday night, the play-in qualifier, I still think even 6 days later, this was an unlosable game in so many ways for the for the Sydney Kings. You look at the situation the Breakers were in. So we know they were without Anthony Lamb. Somehow Will McDowell-White played, but he couldn't even lift his arm beyond sort of shoulder level, so he couldn't really shoot, but he, you know, incredible, a brave performance to still play. Then Zylan Cheatham rolls his ankle in the first half and virtually couldn't run or jump in the second half, but still contributed. Muntas Rubs-Devicius gets ejected halfway through the third quarter. You know, the Sydney Kings are up big in the first half as well. You give a lot of credit to the Breakers because they put together a terrific second half, but in a lot of ways, the Kings imploded at the same time. How did you feel coming away from this one?
So the best play in that game to describe the Kings and their season was late in the fourth. I think it was only a couple points in it. Breakers score. I think it was DJ Hogue inbounded to Adams, who just nonchalantly just kind of let it bounce and then went to pick it up. Parker Jackson Cartwright came in, steal it.
Yep.
I think they ended up getting a three off that.
Yeah.
If that doesn't epitomise what the Kings were this season, I don't know what does. Yep.
And only a few possessions before that, there was Isaiah Liafa, I think it was Adams again, picked his pocket in the backcourt because he was just so lackadaisical.
Yep, absolutely. And, I just think that does it. It sums up the Kings season to an absolute T.
Yep.
The way they came out in the first half, I thought they were just going to run away with it.
Yep.
I thought that, you know, maybe they've kind of sorted some things out, although when they came out and started playing that zone from the get-go, I almost threw my remote through the screen because every single time they play that, they just get picked apart.
Yeah.
So I don't know what kind of plan they had going into that, and we saw it again. They just got absolutely picked apart, we saw Will McDowell-White in the middle of it all this time.
Even post-game, Modi Mayor talked about how delighted he was with the way his team picked apart the zone.
Yeah. To be fair, with the way that's played, I feel like a really under-18 team could pick that zone apart.
Yeah.
Because it was just, it seems like one of those local comp on a Thursday night type zones. Yes. You know, there was no bite to it. There was no real movement. Everyone's arms were down, so they didn't shrink the court.
Mm.
You know, the top guys were too spread. The bottom guys were too low. The middle of the post is the one place that you don't want to allow the ball in a zone.
Yep.
And that's exactly where it went every single time for New Zealand. So I don't understand it.
Yep.
And whether that's something that Coach Mood would want them to do, but the playing group's like, well, no, stuff that, I don't want to do it, so that they just don't play it properly, you know?
We've seen that early in the season. I think it was in Adelaide where he talked post-game about how he had instructed his players to play a full court press.
Yeah.
Nobody did it.
Nobody. Yep. So, look, again, I think that, you know, kind of sums up the Kings season and their playing group and their coaching group were very splintered. And there was no real buy-in from the group to what, you know, Coach Mood's game plans were and all that. So, yeah, look, it was the perfect way for the Kings to go out in that kind of fashion, because that's kind of summed up their back end of the season.
It did. And the only way they were going to lose to this Breakers team, given everything they were dealing with, was if Parker Jackson Cartwright caught fire, and he did. He had 34 points, and he was incredible, but he was allowed to be as well. After the game, Mahmood was asked, did you consider trying to get the ball out of Parker's hands? Did you think about double teaming him? He said, yes, we thought about it, and we decided not to. It cost them the game. It cost him his job. And then we see a few days later, the Illawarra Hawks do everything they can to make Parker's life hard, and they get the win.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand it. And that's been my big thing with them this year is, I've spoken about it on here a ton, is their ability to change their game plan mid-game. Okay, this isn't working, let's do this. Yeah. Like, it just feels like every game they went in, there was no backup plan. There was no, you know, plan B, C, or D. You know, it was just this is our game plan.
Yep.
Whether it works or not, this is what we're doing. So, again, whether that was because the coaching staff kind of knew that the buy-in from the group wasn't the best and, you know, giving them as little to think about as possible was something that they wanted to do, but obviously it doesn't work. And it doesn't work in a league like this. You need those backup plans. You need to be able to adjust mid-game, and they just never did it. And, you know, once he hit four or five straight shots, what more could what more could he do for you to change it up and be like, all right, let's throw a double at him.
And the Breakers had no one else out there that was going to beat them the night.
No one.
Just dare somebody else to beat them, because you had Delaney and Cheatham who were both not healthy. McDowell-White not healthy and he couldn't shoot. Montas was out of the game.
Yeah.
Just dare somebody else to do it.
I don't understand it. And watching it was just infuriating. And It is what it is. Look, I think that I said it before any of this started, that if the Kings figure it out, they're a legit shot at the title with the talent they had.
Yep.
But we just saw the same Kings. Yeah. with their yes. season on the line, we didn't see any kind of adjustment, so we just saw the same kind of Kings. And look, Parker Jackson Cartwright was unbelievable.
He was. Yeah,
he was unbelievable, and that was fun to watch.
What do you make of Angus Glover not playing at all in that game and didn't play at all the last game of the regular season? What do you make of it?
It's infuriating to see. I think especially for that team that's the type of player that they needed to be able to throw out there.
Yes.
It's, you know, someone other than Brucey that's willing to go out and, you know, hit somebody and play some sort of defense. Yeah. And just a cultural leader of the group. You know, I think that...
Even put his body on the line?
Yeah. I mean, without him out there last season, they don't win it.
Yes.
You know, he literally put everything out there. Yeah. You know, he had bloody broken ribs and he was still diving on the floor and doing all that kind of thing. So just kind of that inspirational type player that was certainly lacking from any of the lineups this year. So, look, no idea why it happened, what was going on. But, you know, obviously there's all these rumours out there, but again, none of us actually know the answer. Internally they do, but none of us actually know the answer, so so who knows what happened, but wasn't right. Wasn't right, and I certainly tweeted out a bit of a tweet after it, and showing my displeasure, and look, as a player, that's never fun to do, so, you know, hopefully he lands on his feet somewhere, and he's one of those players that you could slot into any team and they'd be immediately better, especially on the defensive end. So I'm sure he'll land on his feet somewhere.
Maybe he goes back home.
Maybe. I think he'd probably fit in well with that team and how they play.
So that led into the play-in game on Monday night, like we touched on off the top of the show. And it was an incredible game. It was always going to be. I mean, these two teams, they have great never say die attitudes. Yeah. Neither of the Illawarra Hawks or the New Zealand Breakers were going to lie down. Even when the Hawks got up by 15 points in the first half, you always felt like the Breakers would come back into the game, and they did. And probably sort of midway through the fourth quarter, that it felt like they were in control, and they were up by 4 at one point. In the end, it looked like their situation caught up with them, where everything was still on Parker Jackson Cartwright's shoulders, just because of how sore and wounded everybody else wasn't. They lost Will McDowell-White again to another different injury.
Injury.
He had his shoulder, but then he rolls his ankle on, I think it was on Parker's foot from memory.
Possibly.
It was on one of his teammates' foot. So in the end, it felt like it just caught up with the Breakers, and, you know, they gave up 20 offensive rebounds. They had 20 turnovers, and that was pretty influential in the end result. And despite that, they still had a chance. That three from Parker on the buzzer looked
so
good.
Funny.
So they could have sent it to overtime. We talked about it off the top of the show, but what stood out to you after this one?
I mean, the fact that no team wanted to hold onto the ball and they kept turning it over, they kept throwing it to the opposition, was infuriating for a game that had so much riding on it. But again, like the magnitude of this game and the nerves and all that sort of stuff would have been kicking in. And look, that obviously led to a lot of turnovers. But I don't think that, you know, we've seen games where teams have turned it over this much that have just made the game look awful. I don't think they really determined what this game looked like. Obviously, you know, Breakers with 20 turnovers, Hawks scoring 25 points off those, that's rough. I think they're probably lucky that it wasn't more than 25 points, because it could have been a lot more than that. The Hawks have been really good at, you know, causing turnovers and running off it. You know, that's kind of been one thing that they've really helped turn their season around. But on the other end, you know, the Hawks threw it away a ton as well, and gave the chances back to the Breakers. So that kind of evened each other out a little bit. I think the O boards was the big thing for me. Just the Hawks too relentless on those O boards, and, you know, there's only so much Cheatham and you know, Mango can do. Yeah. And I thought both of those guys played really well for the Breakers. And look, the guys like Dave O'Hickey, you know, coming in and just relentless on the boards, and he was, you know, he either got it or had a had a hand in getting it so many times.
I want to get your thoughts on him. How has he been able to come in and play such a big role under Tatum? Because he was virtually a non-factor under Jacob Jacobus and virtually not playing at all. He's become such a vital player, and he's someone that plays down the stretch in games because Justin Tatum has such faith in him, and because he's delivering. Yeah. He does it all based on energy.
Yeah.
Like, he's not the prettiest player, but his energy is incredible.
Yeah, well, that's it. You need guys like that. Mm. You know, he does what Angus Glover did for the Kings last year and the year before. You know, like, those types of guys are key. Like, every team needs that.
Mm.
You know, we see that with Shea in Melbourne. I think that, it's a lot of... A lot of his energy, and especially for how the Hawks are playing now, you know, with the roster they've put together, this is how we thought they would play or should play. You know, that's exactly how it was put together. So, you know, Tatum's come in and kind of helped mold them to play that way, and Hickey is the perfect guy to have on that kind of a team. He's one of those guys that's impossible to box out because he's so herky-jerky, you know, when he's cutting to the ring, you know, if you cut him off and put your forearm through his chest to try and box him out, he's just going to, you know, shoot baseline and still somehow get a hand on the ball or have some sort of impact on the O board. And, you know, he's a game changer for them. You know, he really is. You know, there was one late where he got a hand to it and dove out of court and threw it under his opposite arm.
And saved it under the bucket.
Yeah, and saved it for the Hawks. And I think, again, the Hawks ended up scoring off that late in the game. That is just something that really breaks you back as a defensive unit, you know. You play really good defense for 22, 23 seconds and then someone comes up with an O-board like that. It just really breaks you back, especially in a big game like this. Yeah. So I think just the relentless effort on the offensive glass, I think, was huge for the Hawks, and I think that was probably what ended up getting them over the line.
Justin Robinson as well. He hasn't had a great season, I think it's fair to say. And he's had his troubles and, you know, he found himself out of the starting lineup as well. But this was probably his best game when it mattered the most. And in a game where neither team was shooting their free throws that great, he went 14 of 14. Yeah. That sealed the game in the end.
Yeah, it did. He was unreal. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier in the show, him hitting back-to-back triples late in the fourth to keep the Hawks in touch was not on my bingo card. So that was big too. And, look, he's had a couple games like this where he's shown that his potential. No bigger game to do it than this one. So he was awesome. The big one for me was probably Warney on how he guarded Parker Jackson Cartwright.
Yep, absolutely.
The annoying little pest that Warney is. Yes. And he really showed that. Yep. And he was awesome. He was really good. And he's going to have to keep doing that kind of a thing if the Hawks are going to go far.
It's two pretty good scalps. He's done great jobs on Bryce and now he's done great jobs on Parker. I know they play a team defense as well, but
oh, absolutely,
he deserves a lot of credit for curtailing the two hardest players to stop in the league.
Oh, absolutely. He kind of goes a little bit unnoticed in terms of, like, league defenders, but I think he's certainly up there. Like, he's kind of started to figure out what he can and can't get away with, and
he doesn't get in foul trouble, does he?
Not overly. He doesn't reach. You know, a lot of the guys that get in foul trouble tend to reach. And I don't think I think he's pretty good at using his hips and his chest as a defender and using his length because he's a lot longer than some of the other defenders around. So he knows his strengths. It's really good. And he's disciplined enough not to really get his, you know, hands caught in the cookie jar, which is big, especially in this league.
I want to get your thoughts on the Breakers. How do they now reflect on this season? We've talked all season long about how they've had everything possible thrown in their path to... I think a team of less character would have finished with a wooden spoon with everything that they had thrown against them. They had an NBA trip thrown in there at the start, which made life hell. They lost Justin and Jessup before the season started or after the first game. I can't remember.
Before it started, I think. I don't think he even played a game.
I think you're right. And then, you know, Zylan Cheatham breaks his ankle. Will McDowell-White does his shoulder twice and rolls an ankle. Finn Delaney has not been healthy the entire season. Their next star, Montas Robster-Vicious, was out for a while, injured as well. Anthony Lamb comes in and stars, and then they lose him just before the finals start. Their schedule was tough. They never ended up winning the second game of a back-to-back all season, and that's because they had to travel internationally and play
36 hours most of the time on virtually no rest. Despite all of that, they were still almost one of the top four teams in the competition. How do you sum up their season?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think if you're Modi, you're upset because of how you finished, right? You didn't finish top four. You certainly had a team to be able to do it. But again, luck does play a big part in basketball, unfortunately. But he would look at that team with immense pride, I think, on how they fought. We saw how these guys, you know, adjusted to their adversity and how they fought through it compared to what I think the Phoenix did, right? And how they finished out their season. And Simon touched on that and how, you know, he didn't see any fight in the Phoenix, especially in that last game.
I think the Breakers had as much reason as the Phoenix did, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
To turn it up.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we just see, we saw the character of some of the guys on the team. You know, I think that they were down and out from the get-go coming into playoffs and then win a big game against the Kings and come into this one and had every right to just kind of pack up shop and just call it a season after the first quarter, even after the second.
Especially once Will goes down as well.
And then, well, that's it. And then Will ends up going down in the third quarter with his, it was the second quarter, I think. And then
he tried to come back in the second half. Yeah. Yep.
Started the second half and just didn't last long. It looked like he got subbed out because he'd done something wrong on the defensive end, the way he and Modi were going back and forth. But then it just looked like no chance. Once that cooled off, it would have been done. The ankles are not fun. They're not fun at all. As soon as they cool off, it's almost like there's cement in it. So they're hard to play on, especially the way he plays.
Yeah.
Look, I think that they were unbelievable with all the things thrown at them. And they're no strangers to all these different things thrown at them. You know, since the COVID years, it's kind of been the way that they've had their seasons play out, right? So, look, I think at end of the day, it's if you take a big step back and look at the big picture, it's probably a bit of a failed season because they didn't make the four. But I think there is a lot to take out of it for sure.
I want to get your thoughts on Tom Abercrombie. Cody, he's now played his last NBL game in unbelievable career. It defies belief when you look at the things that he's achieved. 427 games, four championships, grand final MVP, and just about every category at the Breakers except for rebounds, which is owned by Mika Vekona.
Yeah.
he's the all-time leader in. So games played, points, field goals, everything else. You go right down the list. He's an all-time great of that club. His number 10 will be up in the rafters before too long.
Very shortly, yeah.
You played your entire NBL career up against him and matched up with him.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit. What are your thoughts now that his career is over?
Oh, look, I mean, firstly, massive congratulations because heck of a career. To do what he's done, especially for a team like the Breakers, has been super impressive. And just, I know when I think of the Breakers, it's Mika and it's Abercrombie.
Yep.
They're the two guys that spring to mind straight away. Lucky enough to play against both of them for, like you said, my entire career. So, look, I mean, it was always nerve-wracking coming up against Tom because of his athleticism and just his smarts and the fact that he's so long and just reads the game so well. And you knew if you were coming into a New Zealand game and he was on a bit of a tear that it was going to be a long night for you. So, always loved matching up against him. You know, it wasn't too often because kind of, you know, when I was playing, he was still playing kind of more of that three.
Maybe two at times.
Yeah, exactly. And it was never fun when he was guarding you because there was not a whole lot you could do. Because, again, just I think that's something that probably doesn't get spoken about enough is how good he was on the defensive end and not just, you know, help side blocking shots, but just on ball. You know, he was strong. He understood everyone he was guarding, his length, and he was always guarding one of the best players on the opposition teams. And yeah, it was always fun to compete against him. But look, heck of a career. Like you said, his jersey will be up there in the rafters in no time. Yes. I think it'll be fairly quick, you know, between now and when it goes up. So. Huge congratulations, and was certainly a pleasure to share the court with him, with one of the all-time greats.
One of the very few people that or players that I've ever come across that I've never heard a bad word said about him. I don't know if you've ever come across a bad word about him. You've played against him, and I don't know if you even have a bad word to say about him. I've never heard anyone say anything bad about him, and that to me sums up a guy that's of immense character, great competitor, but just a great person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's no one that is that I've spoken to that's ever had a bad word to say against him either. So look, and you're right. He was never one of those guys that would talk crap or anything like that on the court. He'd just go about his business and get the job done and let his game do the talking. So
not true. He's ever even sworn, has he?
I don't think so. No, exactly. So no, look, one of the good guys of the league, and amazing career, and not how he would have wanted to go out, but certainly went down swinging.
No, he's already got the four rings, so he doesn't have a lot to complain about.
No, absolutely not.
All right, Cody. We'll take our final break. When we come back, let's turn our attention to our two playoff series.
Sounds good.
He'll make it for sure. That's why I backed him on Tap Touch.
You got the touch. You got the power. Got the touch? Choose Tap Touch. Better your bet. Download the app today.
Imagine what you could be buying instead.
Okay, back on Hoop 7's Basketball Hustle. I'm here with Cody Ellis. Now, thanks to Tap Touch, Cody, let's get stuck into these two playoff series. Before we talk about Melbourne United versus the Illawarra Hawks and then the Perth Wildcats against the Tasmania Jackjumpers, are you comfortable that we've got the best four teams left?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, again, a fully healthy New Zealand team, I think, would be in this four, but I'm not sure who you take out.
Yep.
Definitely I think these four teams ended up on top to finish the season. So I think all very deserved of these semis.
Yeah, I think so too. So head to Tap Touch on the Tap Touch app or taptouch.com.au and we'll try and help you find some winners, Cody. So it all gets underway Thursday night. Melbourne United at home to the Illawarra Hawks. I want to get your thoughts on the schedule first of all. So this will be Melbourne's first game in almost 3 weeks since they played their last game in the regular season. The Hawks have now played two really tough games in between and have a short turnaround from Monday night to Thursday night. I actually feel like that suits the Hawks better because they're in a groove, and Melbourne have had to do it tough to stay in not so much game shape, but to continue having been game ready.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel the different scenarios fit each team?
Yeah, look, I think you're right. I think that does give it a bit of an advantage to the Hawks. The big thing for Melbourne would be mentally switched on, and I think it's a team full of veterans, so I don't think that's going to be really a big issue for them.
Mm.
But, yeah, look, the short turnaround does bode well for the Hawks, for sure, especially going home to play as well. So it's an interesting one. You know, I do think that I think in general the top two teams were happy with how that first playing game went, not the playing game, but the Tassie and the Hawks game, because Tassie have had Melbourne's number and Illawarra have had Perth's number.
Yes.
So they ended up playing probably the team that they'd rather play of the two.
That's a great point. Yeah.
But still, again, neither team are going to be easy beat.
Yeah.
You know, I think this Perth and Tassie series is going to be unreal.
Mm.
I think if the Hawks can really figure out how to stop United on the defensive end, then they'll be in it. But it, you know, if they start bleeding points, I just don't think they have the same firepower that Melbourne do. So yeah, it's going to be a couple of interesting series.
Yeah. So Melbourne and the Hawks, it's almost like you've got the depth and the experience of Melbourne.
Yeah.
You've got the heart and the hustle and the determination of the Hawks. When you've got those two pitted against each other, which would you have your money on?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a tough one because come playoffs, it's always more of a grind. You know, it's usually less points on the board.
Mm.
So, look, points are usually a lot harder to come by because there's more let go on the defensive end.
Mm.
I do hope we see that. I do hope that there's not whistles blown every single possession.
Yes.
But, look, I can't see either team really blowing the other team out of the water purely because I think that Melbourne has the firepower to be able to do that to the Hawks, but I don't think the way that they're playing and their, you're right, like you said, their grit, their determination, their willingness to kind of do whatever it takes to win will allow that. I think we kind of saw their bit of a hiccup game against Tassie. So I think that they'll be primed and ready to go. I honestly can't pick who will win this series. It wouldn't surprise me if the Hawks got this first game, purely because Melbourne haven't played for 3 weeks.
Yes.
And Melbourne possibly stealing the next two. Mm-hmm. But look, the Hawks win that first game and then going back to Wollongong to play would be scary for Melbourne.
Yeah, it would. Okay, Friday night game one, Perth Wildcats, Tasmania Jack Jumpers. Very similar. The Wildcats wouldn't have played for almost 3 weeks. The Jack Jumpers have only played once, but they got a really good hit out in that game against the Hawks where they'd be feeling on top of the world given the way they played in that game and the momentum they would have taken. I guess we wait and see how Marcus Lee pulls up as well, but gee, even if he doesn't play, that just means more minutes for Will Magne, so it's not necessarily a bad thing. Doesn't feel like a great matchup for the Wildcats.
No.
I don't know if they've got an answer for Magne, but I also don't know if the Jack Jumpers have a great defensive answer for Bryce Cotton either. So this is fascinating in a lot of ways. Nice rivalry between the two teams as well. How does it play out?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one because you're right, Tassie rolling right now. Perth not playing for 3 weeks.
And had been playing poorly before that.
Yeah, hadn't played great. So that's been a long 3 weeks for those players. I already know it because they would have been running to the ground for that first probably week and a half and then spent this week kind of preparing, I think. So they would have had an intra-club scrimmage that Bryce wasn't involved in, which is fair. I think making sure Bryce is at 100% health.
Were you asked to be involved? Did you get back on the court?
No, absolutely not. No. So, look, I think that I still think having 3 weeks off is ridiculous moving into playoffs. It's so crazy. You know, we see it in the AFL with some of those guys having 2 weeks before playing a finals game. It's just not right. But that's a different story, obviously. Every game between these two teams has been awesome.
Yes.
It's been a lot of fun, and I think I even said it earlier in the season. If we had a series, if we had a five game series between these guys, I'd hope it'd go to five so we could see every little bit of these games. So I think going off purely off form, I think Tassie gets the first game on Friday. I just think they'll be more ready, not more ready to go. I guess they've got. I mean, they've been playing, so you know they've got that wood over the Cats, unfortunately. But again, winning in the jungle is no easy feat, especially come playoffs. So I'm sure it's going to be loud. But for Bryce, it's going to be a team defense, and I think Scott Roth and his staff are probably the perfect guys to figure out how to do that.
Would you be surprised if both series didn't go to three games?
I think so. Mm. I think I would be surprised if there was a sweep in either of them. I just think that there's so much positivity for all four teams, and there's so many reasons why they could win the series. Mm. So, look, it's probably about as fun a Final Four as we've seen in a while. Mm. So, really looking forward to it, to kicking off. Wouldn't mind a couple overtimes and sprinkled in there. That'd be great.
Yes. Put your neck on the line, Cody. Who are the two winners of these series?
United and Tassie.
Okay.
And
that's a scary matchup for Melbourne in the grand final.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is. I before all the playoffs started, I actually thought Tassie would win it all.
Yep.
We texted about it. Yep. We've already texted about it. We both said that Magne might be the MVP.
Yes.
And then he came out and did that to Illawarra, and you know,
yes.
Look, it's you can never count Bryce out. It's tough. You know, a Bryce-led team is always going to be a threat. My only thing is I do think that there'll be more, well, not more, I guess there'll be a bit of a difference in adjustments throughout the series for Tassie. So, look, it's going to be a heck of a battle. I'm fairly confident on the Melbourne the Hawks one, unfortunately. I would love to see the Hawks in a grand final again. That would be fantastic.
Mm.
But I do think Melbourne have too many pieces.
Yeah.
And again, a Dean Vickerman coach team is nothing to scoff at. So, especially with the talent they have. But yeah, the Perth Jack Jumpers one for me is really a flip of the coin. But I'll go with Tassie only because I picked them to win the whole thing before it all started.
Okay. Before we wrap things up, WNBL finals are heating up as well. Were you alive when the Perth Breakers won a championship in 1992, Cody?
Yes, I was 2 years old.
You've spent a lifetime seeing the Wildcats win multiple NBL championships, but it hasn't been the same for whether they were called the Breakers or the Perth Lynx or the West Coast Waves. Yeah. They've been a struggle in the WNBL, but they wait to see now who they play in the grand final between the Southside Flyers and the Melbourne Boomers. Could this be the year the drought ends for the Lynx?
Oh, I think so. If they can stay healthy for the next series, then definitely. I think Ari's been unbelievable. Saw it. He's probably the best player in the competition. Yeah. And that's saying something because there's some elite talent, especially this year. Again, it's just a league that keeps growing and growing. Mm. And yeah, look, I think, you know, the fact that they kind of scraped in because they were without best player in the competition in my book for 8-9 games, however many it was, and then come up against a really good Fire team and come out and win 2-0, I think is huge. So it'll be interesting to see who they face. I think that I think this certainly could be the year. I think it's kind of primed for that. And be nice for them to get a title.
It would. All right. We'll know a lot more when we come back next week, Cody. So that's been a lot for us to cover. Once again, we might not have as many games to run through, but no shortage of things to talk about, never, as always, Cody. So thank you for joining me once again. Thank you to Hoop 7 and to TapChart for making it possible. I'm Chris Buck, and I'll sign off and let you finish with whatever might be on your mind. Cody?
Bring on the finals.
He'll make it for sure. Now that's why I backed him on Tap Touch.
Hey, Luke!
Yes, Gene Simmons?
He's probably the best when it comes to this stuff!
Thanks, Gene.
You've got the touch!
You got the touch! You got the power. Got the touch? Choose Tap Touch. Better your bet. Download the app today.
Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.